Welcome to Breitbart News Daily. Thanks for being here. So we talked in the second hour about, first of all, WrestleMania, which I got sucked into. I'm so glad I did. And then we talked about Israel and Hamas. And that was an important and good conversation. We had a troll call in who we de-trolled him a bit and had somewhat of a legitimate, real conversation. I'm grateful for that. But I want to play for you here the opening segment. We do this every Monday. It's never worked until today. I should say every Monday. This is maybe the fourth Monday we've tried it. And we don't have a name for it yet. If you have a good name, send me an email, slater@breitbart.com. Something like Good News Monday or Gratitude Monday. It's not so much about good news as much as gratitude, but it's based off a song called Good News Sold. So that's kind of the emphasis is really on the virtue of gratitude, not so much on the fleetingness of a good news. I don't really know what to do with it yet. But the point is, if you have good news, something you're grateful for, you want to call and share, do it now. And we had some wonderful phone calls at that point, and it's a great way to start the week. Good News Monday.
You see a little boy hugging on a black lab, 'cause after 2 weeks it came back home. Lady going through stage four saying thank you Lord, 'cause the cancer's gone. Couple seeing two pink lights for the first time after trying for a while. Wouldn't be too hard to find a smile. If good news sold, the world wouldn't seem so bad. If good news sold, we'd be buying everything they had. And we'd all sleep a little bit better at night. All be a little less left or right. And turning the TV on, checking your phone would never get old. If good news sold.
That's the song that inspired it. You got any gratitude? You got any good news you want to share Monday, 6 o'clock? That's the time to do it right now, 866-95-PATRIOT. Mine is Johnny scored his first goal in soccer. He's 4 years old. That was super fun. He got one, and then he was like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. This feels good. And then he got another one like a minute later. The kid crushed it. And then we saw an owl in the wild, like a big owl, like the Tootsie Pop commercial, like a proper, like a comically large owl that was actually kind of scary because it's so big. And I don't like birds. I don't like the beady eyes. It's like they got a soul. Birds scare me. It was like crazy. See this thing. That was awesome. And then on Thursday, I'm driving to St. Louis to speak at a pro-life center. So it's going to be fun. I always look forward to that. Gratitude's a muscle. We got to think about this stuff. We have to be intentional about gratitude. So if anything ever strikes your fancy to share to the world, this is your chance Monday at 6 o'clock. Or you can send me an email, slater@breitbart.com. Some people send me emails because they're listening to the podcast. Or got a lot going on. Can't get to a phone right now. Slater@Breitbart.com. 866-95-PATRIOT. I came across, and it's any time this hour you want to call in. I came across a few things that may be a good way to start off the week. So I'm reading this book called The Pursuit of Happiness, and it's about what inspired our founders on that line in particular, the pursuit of happiness, but just everything, morality and virtue, just who and what inspired our founders. And I've been studying what happened the generation before our founding fathers, our founding grandfathers, and the generations before them. Our founders, they didn't make anything up. They had to come from somewhere. And they combined things in ways that had never been combined before and had an opportunity to combine it in the brand new world like no one's ever had before. It's an absolute miracle, the whole thing. So reading about John Adams. John Adams was reading this British philosopher, James Harris was his name. And James Harris wrote that a life whose pursuings and avoidings are governed by these virtues, the four grand virtues: prudence, temperance, fortitude, and justice. You want to get our country back? You want to listen? There's a political movement that needs to occur in this country, but there's a virtue movement that needs to occur. That's it. Those are the four. That's the foundation of it. Prudence, temperance, fortitude, justice. You want to save this country, you do. You get back to those. He said, is that true and rational life, which we have so long been seeking? This is what inspired our founding fathers. And our happiness, here's the key line, our happiness is dependent, but again, happiness is not a fleeting emotion. It's based in real things. Our happiness is dependent not on success, but on the aim. Because as any sportsman or hunter, any sportsman will tell you, the joy is in the pursuit. The joy is in the pursuit. That's the type of stuff our founding fathers were reading when they came up with the line that you have the inalienable rights endowed by your creator for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The pursuit of it. Last point on John Adams that I think is relevant to us. John Adams was very worried about what people thought of him. Always worried about what other people were thinking of him. Very anxious about it. And he was taken out by vanity. He also had a really bad temper. But he was aware about all the stuff and he worked on it constantly, just like all of our founding fathers. They were so dedicated to personal self-improvement, like a crazy dedication and awareness with constant analysis and self-examination, like almost to a fault, like too much. But John Adams says, he is not a wise man and is unfit to fill any important station in society that has left one passion in his soul unsubdued. So it's all about self-control. Today in our society, we have no self-control. And our founders were all about massive, like as much self-control as you could possibly. But vanity was his big one. He dreaded meeting with these two guys, these two big time lawyer guys, James Otis and James Putnam were his two. Like he's just like intimidated by these guys. He says, I suspect, he wrote this in his diary. He said, I suspected they laughed at me with satirical and contemptuous smiles. He's like, oh, they think I'm nothing. And he felt bad about it. But then he went back to Cicero. And it was Cicero who taught John Adams to act in, here's a quote, act in contempt of fortune, fame, beauty, praise, and all such things. Well, Cicero, you know, 3000 and John Adams, 300 year old way of saying, don't care what other people think about you. Don't care. Just do the right thing. He wrote in his diary that no money, but John Adams said his goal was to work to cultivate an easy heart and a quiet mind. And he would always quote in Latin this line from Cicero, where Cicero wrote, greatness of soul and contempt for human affairs. Greatness of soul, that's what matters to me. Greatness of soul. A couple lines, if you go back to the original Cicero, a couple lines before that, Cicero said, the seeking after an investigation of truth is proper to man. That's our purpose, is to seek truth. So I just thought that stuff was good to start off with, that we need to focus on the truth. Let's not desire anything other than in ourselves, an easy heart and a quiet mind. Or as our founders would put it, happiness. So let's pursue it every day and let's not worry what other people say about us or you or me in that pursuit. That's vanity. So John Adams worked hard against. Go to Richard in Ohio. Richard, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm wonderful this morning. How are you?
Man, it's great to talk to you. What's on your mind? What's your good news for our Gratitude Monday?
Well, my good news is that, first of all, I live in this wonderful country, America, and I'm a free patriot. And, you know, I grew up, and what you were just talking about, you know, the truth has set me free in my life. You know, my life was a lie, and I was led astray by many things. I was an addict and an alcoholic, and God took all that away from me. And I just recently, like tomorrow, I go pick up the keys because I got to clear the clothes on a brand new house. And I just want to let people know that, you know, God is real. The American dream is still alive. And that, you know, if you pursue the truth and you fight for what's right, that it's possible. It's possible. You could still, you know, we just all have to stand together in this thing, because evil is really trying to overtake our country right now. And good Christians like us, I listen to you every morning. I loved your show. I loved your Christian themes and your base. And I just, you know, I'm a patriot. And sometimes I get down and I start to lose hope because it just seems like we're so overwhelmed by evil. And then I'll go to church and the message will be just for me that day. And I never forget, you know, that God is real and the American dream's alive, and I will never stop fighting for that. I thank you for what you do, and I will always be a fan.
Beautiful, Richard. Let me ask you one question, if you don't mind, sir. By the way, this is exactly what I'm hoping for on Gratitude Monday. You had a line there. You said, my life was a lie. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. Well, I mean that everything that I thought was real, I was so angry because I was led astray by just by the world. And you know, when we was younger, it was all fun and everything. You know, I started drinking and doing drugs, and I just wanted to be cool and fit in because I felt like an outcast. And really all that was a lie leading me to my death. And, you know, the truth was really what gave me life. and that moment when I realized that God had it all, it was like a weight, a veil was lifted from my eyes and a weight was lifted from my shoulders. And, you know, I could barely talk about it without getting, you know, because it changed my life so dramatically. Like, I don't think most people don't realize the person that I am today. You know, I was a bottom of the barrel. I was like living on Skid Row or homeless. I didn't know if I was going to eat from one day to the next. Everything was about getting that next fix. And here I am today. I'm an upstanding member of society, whatever you want to call that.
Yep.
And I fight for my rights. I'm active in my community and my church. And I just got to clear the clothes on a $230,000 house, which ain't a big deal to some people, but to me, it's enormous.
Oh, no. It's what that, I can't fathom what that house represents. Everything that is in that final signature on those papers, because the bank, And everyone trusts you that signature of yours means something on those papers.
That's right.
And you're gonna put your signature on there, and they're gonna hand you keys, you to a thing you own. But that's quite remarkable. Did you ever think when you were in the bottom of your addiction that you would ever own a house?
Never. I never imagined. Even after God came in and turned my life upside down, I just didn't imagine it was possible for someone like me.
That's great.
You know, God continues to show me every day that anything is possible as long as you're obedient to him. So
that's it. Richard, you're the man. Congratulations on the house tomorrow.
Thank
man.
You.
Super grateful.
Thank
that's
you.
Great.
I love you guys, man. Keep doing what you do. We need more of it.
You're the man. We're doing it together. Thanks, Richard. There you go. That's what I'm talking about. Perfect. I'm feeling great. Aren't you feeling good? How can you not feel good about that? Man, that's it. Was it the other day we talked about Kid Rock? I saw some interview with Kid Rock, and he's sober and like on this big health kick now. And he's like, yeah, man, I can't do the stuff I did 20 years ago. And it's like, Mr. Rock, no one should do the stuff you did 20 years ago. Because that gentleman in Ohio was doing the stuff you did 20 years ago and about destroyed his life. No one should be doing that. I love how you talked about burden. You talked about your life, how it was, or I should say when you were saved, that it was the removing of a burden. So that's why this is all ancient stuff, man. That's Pilgrim's Progress. That's right there. That's Christian going on his journey to the celestial city, and he had a burden on his back. He's carrying this burden. And he was able to get rid of that burden. Oh, what a relief. What a relief to get rid of that burden. It's beautiful. 866-95-PATRIOT. 866-95-PATRIOT. But real quick on the, you said I felt like an outcast. That's worth exploring too. Because so did John Adams. That was the story. That John Adams, he's like, oh, no one likes me. No one likes me. No one respects me. I know they're laughing about me behind my back. I know they're making fun of me behind my back. And he had to learn. He's like, okay, no, forget it. It doesn't matter. I can't control other people. This is the Stoic influence of our founders. I can't control other people. I'm just going to do what I can do. Even if they are talking about me behind my back. One of my mentors always told me, actually told his daughter, who was schizophrenic for a while and this whole thing, but told her, no one's thinking about you as much as you're thinking about yourself. It's a great line. No one's thinking about you as much as you're thinking about yourself. And they're not thinking about you, just like you're not constantly focused on them. You know what I mean? Like you're not walking around being like, oh, Nancy, can you believe Nancy? All right. But like we all think, like Nancy thinks all, everyone's thinking about Nancy. Or I think everyone's thinking about me all the time. No, no one's thinking about you. No one, not nearly as much as you're thinking about you in a negative way. And that's what John Adams had to come to realize. Like, I forget about it. I just need to focus on what I can focus on. 866-95-PATRIOT. Go to Lisa, who's in Pennsylvania. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning. Listen to you every morning on my way to work, and I'm calling in on this Gratitude Monday because Saturday I had lunch with 10 moms who recently lost their child to fentanyl, this fentanyl overdose poisoning. And I'm one of them, but I'm 5 years out from my tragic loss. And I was able to meet with them and provide them some hope and that they will survive this. And, it was terrible. Wow. But I actually left that lunch feeling good for the first time in a long time.
Wow. Do you mind sharing what happened with your son, daughter? What happened?
My son, Greg, was 27, master's degree in internet security. He got his first job in Florida, and he was down there, and he was out with his friends and thought he was smoking pot and just having a good time, and it was laced with illicit fentanyl that came across the border, and he died sitting in a chair.
5 years ago. How did you find out?
I was at work. I'm in anesthesiology, and I was in the operating room taking care of a patient. And the Fort Lauderdale police called me and said my son was dead in his bedroom.
What?
Yeah.
Do you fall to the ground? What's a mom's reaction?
Yeah, I did. It was pretty much a shit show in the operating room that day. But thank God, everybody came to my rescue, and I have a lot of faith, and I'm now a big part of awareness. I've met a lot of the border 911 people who are working on this, and a lot of senators, and I've been to the White House. I've been to the Pennsylvania Capitol, and just trying to help other parents from not getting this phone call.
Okay, so now you're at lunch with 10 other parents, and they're looking to you because this just happened to them. So they're looking to you for what? For hope?
For hope. Yeah. Like, how are we going to get out of bed? How are we going to keep going? And because these are not overdoses. These are poisonings from this fentanyl coming across our border. And none of these kids thought they were, you know, taking a deadly dose of fentanyl.
Yeah.
They thought they were taking something else.
Yeah. The how are we going to get out of bed? That to be in that position of life, that's real. That's real. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I felt good on Saturday.
Mm.
So
that's great. Yeah. And so did other people for maybe the first time in a while. And as you did. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Lisa, thanks for calling. Thanks for...
Hey, you got it.
Thanks for... It's a great goodbye. Thanks for taking your tragedy and turning it in and trying to turn it into something good to help other people. I always thought this was just secular earthly wisdom, but and it's funny when you go along... Two things happen. There'll be like a line that you hear your whole life, and then you're like, oh, that's the opposite of the truth, actually. I can't think of anyone at the top of my head. This is the first one. This isn't quite good enough, but beauty's in the eye of the beholder is one. It's like, oh, like you just, it rolls off the tongue. You're like, oh, that's actually not true at all. But sometimes you'll be like, oh, that's like definitely not in the Bible, or it's the opposite of a biblical truth. And then sometimes there'll be an expression that everyone says all the time that oh, wow, that's actually a biblical expression that is from the Bible. And 2 Corinthians 1:3 talks about how God comforts us in our affliction so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction. So to be able to take your tragedy and use it to help and love on other people and give them that hope, that's everything right there. It's beautiful. Your son would certainly be proud, no question. Frank is in New Hampshire, the live free or die state. Frank, good morning.
Morning, Mike. You're doing a great job, and having a gratitude day is a great idea.
Thanks, Frank. Go ahead.
I'm retired in the woods. I'm off the grid. I have to heat with wood. I don't have running water in the house.
Yes.
I got a light bulb now because I have my own solar panels, but nobody has it better than me because I don't have to think about what anybody thinks of me. I go for days without seeing people, and... It's a great retirement. I'm having a happy second childhood. I got some critters, some cattle and chickens, and my best friend, the sun just came up, and I happen to be in the path of totality, which
would
be cloudy, but the sun, there isn't a cloud in the sky, and but you know, we're this all this talk about nuclear war, if I can change the move into that.
Sure.
You know, we got to live together on the planet with other people. You know, it's easy for me to love people if I don't see a human being for a whole week, right?
Yeah.
But we're all together on this planet, and we can't, like all this talk, we're trying to start a war with Iran. There's 70 million people there. Are we just going to blow them all up? Because we're going to end up taking incoming eventually. And so even if we don't like other people, we've got to talk to them. There's got to be negotiations. I don't get it. And it's the same, the Israel thing. I support Israel forever, and I love prayer. And Seth Leibson said the other day that we can't share the planet with the Palestinians because they're subhuman animals. Well, we have no choice but to share the planet with them and get along with them.
Yeah.
They got to stop killing children because there's no difference between killing a three-year-old of any race. It's a tragedy, right? Am I wrong?
No. And you can win wars and bring about real true peace. There's a way to do that. My buddy's in Japan right now. Actually, Jimmy Kimmel did this bit about how Japan's so wonderful and clean. And you know, like, we're buddies now. Like, you can win a war and change hearts and minds. It's possible, but it takes a total war to win it. Real quick, and I want to touch on all that stuff. Did you feel like when you got a light bulb, you sold out?
No, I had LED headlights I wore all the time. I have one on right now. I still wear headlights. Once they got the LEDs and the battery rechargeable ones, I always had one. There's a little etiquette problem if you do have company in the evening, because you can't look at the other person and glance them in the eye.
That's right.
Everybody who wears headlights knows that. You sort of have to adjust yourself.
That's funny. Yeah, you're like, stop looking at me. Turn away. Turn away. Greg, I appreciate the call. One of my buddy's dads does like crazy hikes. Like Appalachian Trail, or like hikes that take months, and just by himself. And he says it takes him 3 weeks, 3 weeks of walking by himself before he starts to feel like himself. That's his detox. It's a 3 week detox before he can brush off the world and live like, and be who he's supposed to be, and full detox. And they're just crazy to think about, because, you know, if you ever take a week long vacation, like that's you're just starting to unwind. So it takes them 3 weeks of that. And then he says, once you're about 3 months in, you're like, OK, I got to get back to the I got to get back to life now. I'm like, there's like too much detox. It's like, let's get back to, you know, doing things. Anyway, great calls. 866-95-PATRIOT, 866-95-PATRIOT. Grateful to you. Welcome back to Breitbart News Daily. There's the on-the-ground story in Nebraska of, what the heck, Nebraska? You couldn't pull this off. And then there's the big-picture story of the rhinos, where it's like, what the heck, Republicans? Even when we give you a supermajority you still can't do it? You can't do the thing you should do? Here's Nebraska, a Nebraska state senator on winner-take-all Electoral College. I want to talk about Nebraska here for a minute. There is a chance... hope it certainly doesn't, is not this close, but there is a chance where the whole darn election comes down to Nebraska's second congressional district. Like, wait a second. Every single state is winner take all when it comes to the electors. So if Biden wins California, he gets all the electors. If Trump wins Florida, he gets all the electors. That's true for every single state except for Nebraska and Maine. Nebraska decided, hey, let's vote to become winner take all like every other state. And I remember last week there were a couple days when this was moving forward, and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool, like, nice job, Nebraska, like, well done. This is what happens when you have a Republican state legislature, and a big one, because I'm in close, like a supermajority. Wonderful, great job, Nebraska. And then the next day, great job, Nebraska. Oh, look at that, we're moving forward to the... and then the next day, failed. Like, vote failed. What are you talking about, Nebraska? Want to go to Senator, State Senator Lauren Lippincott. State Senator, how are you, sir?
Good morning, sir. Very well, thank you.
Thanks for being here. So you're one of the co-sponsors of this bill. So let's go back. Let's go back to the very beginning. Why is Nebraska one of the two states that doesn't do it winner take all? What's the history of that?
Well, sir, as you mentioned, only Maine and Nebraska have the district plan, or more accurately called the composite plan. And let me explain. Mm-hmm. Back in 1972, Maine adopted this procedure. And the reason that they did was that they wanted to give third-party candidates an opportunity to compete. That was back in 1972, and Maine has remained the leading state that has the district plan. And just to explain what I mean by composite plan, as we know, all the states have two electoral votes, which are assigned to the two U.S. senators. So that would be winner take all. But Maine then, back in 1972, adopted the district plan for the congressional districts. They have two congressional members for their state. And of course, we know that that is assigned by the number of populations. Each United States representative represents approximately 700,000 people. Hmm. Nebraska has five. So that was back in 1972 for Maine. Then in 1992, 30 years later, the great state of Nebraska adopted this same composite plan, and they thought it was an experiment. They thought that it was going to sweep the nation. They thought there was going to be a trend in that direction, but it did not. And Nebraska has tried about six different times to eliminate, to switch back to winner-take-all like the other 48 states, but it's fallen short. Now, actually, it did pass the legislature twice, and both times we had a Democrat governor in the state of Nebraska. Uh-huh. The Democrat governor did veto that legislation. So here we are in 2024, and we tried again to pass this legislation. But now, as a backdrop, Nebraska has a unicameral. We're the only state in the nation that does have a unicameral, which means we only have one house in the legislature. It's a Senate. And there's 49 state senators that represent approximately 40,000 people per legislative district. So what happens is we have three rounds of legislative process, the so-called sausage-making process, round one, two, and three. And what the Democrats have been fond of doing recently is they will filibuster the progress, and it takes 33 votes, a supermajority, in order to stop the filibuster. That's called cloture. And we have tried over and over again to get this legislation passed, but right now we are sitting at approximately 30 votes out of 33 votes in order to stop the filibuster, and we've just been stopped on it. I introduced this particular bill last year, 2023. We do operate, as many legislatures do, on a biennium, which is a two-year cycle, and I brought it back in this legislative year, but I continued to put my finger on the pulse and only had about 30 votes out of the 33 needed in order to stop the filibuster.
Okay, I got a ton of questions. Aren't there 33 Republicans in the Nebraska Senate?
There are 33 Republicans now in the Nebraska Senate. One of the Democrats just switched over to Republican last week. But here's the problem that we have. Of the 49 state senators, 14 of those represent Omaha. Five of them represent Sharpe County, which is part of the Omaha Metroplex. Lincoln, Lancaster County, has nine state senators. So you add 9 plus 5, that's 14. 14 plus 14, that's 28. So 28 out of the 49 state senators, that's 57% of our state senators represent either Omaha or Lincoln.
No way.
Some of those, yeah, so some of those people are a holdout. And as I'm sure you know, our electoral college is important because what it does is it spreads out the representation of our country so that we don't just simply have population centers that are represented. And the same argument then could be made for winner take all. And so
you said that in order to break the filibuster, you need 33 Republicans to just stop it and just move on to the vote. And you have 33 Republicans by that miracle that one gentleman switched over, mostly because of abortion, I believe, right? Switched over. So it's great. We got 33 Republicans. Boom. Let's get this done. But you're saying, oh, no, a lot of these are from Omaha. So they may be Republican, but, you know, the rhino would be the name for that. Wow, that's crazy. Okay, let's go back again. I got more questions than things you said. So I just assumed that Nebraska has been this way since they became a state in 1992. They've been doing it this way. That's it.
That is correct. Yeah, we became a state in 1867, but this district plan, composite plan that we have presently, it only began in 1992. And I said a few moments ago, we have attempted to switch back. As a matter of fact, it became law in 1992, and in 1993, the following year, the legislature did vote it back. We went back to winner take all, so we reversed course. However, our Democrat governor He vetoed that, and there were not enough votes to override his veto.
Wow. Wow. Again, you said that's happened twice where you had a Democratic governor. Okay, so the stars have aligned perfectly. This is your opportunity. You have a Republican governor. You have 33 Republicans to do it and still can't get it done. That's wild. So what happened last Friday where there was some procedural vote that was like 8-33 or something? What was that one about?
Well, we have tried to milk the cow any possible way that we could, but as I mentioned earlier, I have kept my finger on the pulse, and I have talked to the holdouts, the individuals that are against this, that are not going to vote green to pass this legislation, and I've asked them over and over again. I said, have you changed your position? I've tried to argue the positives of switching back to winner take all, and they've just not moved, and it's just it's been very, very frustrating, but screaming louder, jumping up and down on top of your desk and setting your hair on fire, it just simply does not move them.
So this was a procedural vote to do some sort of like backdoor kind of way to make it happen?
Well, there's been a number of things. Number one, the bill is actually still in the government committee. And even though it did have enough votes to get out of the government committee, because we are very, very short on time, I don't want to get into the weeds too much here, but Nebraska, as most states, we either have a long or a short session. Last year, an odd year, we did a 90-day session. This year, a 60-day session. So we only have 3 days this week and 1 day next week, so we only have 4 days left. So obviously, to go through the three rounds of legislation, it does take some time to make that all happen. And because we did not have enough votes for this bill, what we were going to do was hook it on to another bill. But quite frankly, that other bill also did not have popular support. It had about 31 votes to override a filibuster.
Okay. All right. so much good stuff. Our time is with the state senator of Nebraska, Lauren Lippincott. So how often are you in session?
During an even year like this year, we're in session for 60 working days.
What? Your state legislature is open for business for 60 days out of the year. That's it? And what are you guys doing the rest of the year?
Fishing. No, actually, last year, an odd year, we were in session for 90 days. And
that's awesome. That's so awesome. So I just spent the last 12 years in California where they're in session 400 days. So it's like they never stop. It's just constant government all the time. And you guys are barely ever in session. That's amazing. Okay, I love the idea. How much do you get paid? $100,000.
$1,000 a month.
That's great. So the argument in California is that we need to raise the salaries. They needed to raise the salaries of all elected officials because you got to get the best of the best. And the only way you're going to get the best of the best is if you pay more money. You got to pay like a market rate or something for the smartest people. What's the policy in Nebraska?
Well, Nebraska, we're a red state. We're a fiscally conservative state. And personally, I think $1,000 a month is maybe overpaid for what we do.
That's great. Oh, gosh, that's just so different. We're like different planets. Okay, sorry, back to the task at hand. So when you talk to the folks, the Republicans from the Omaha area, what is their argument? What is their constitutionally principled argument against winner-take-all for the Electoral College?
Well, they don't have very solid arguments, in my opinion. Now, one of them that they have right now is, well, we don't want to upset the apple cart right now in the middle of an election. And of course, I'm thinking, well, what was your excuse last year?
Yeah. What's the difference? Who cares? Like, what do you mean is in the middle of? We're always in election season in this country. Like,
correct.
It is what it is.
That's right.
Okay, but is there any?
And if I could also mention this, you know, if it was such a great idea, how come New York, California, Illinois, Massachusetts, how come those states have not adopted this composite plan, district plan, and followed Maine and followed Nebraska? Well,
yeah.
I can tell you why. Because the state of California and New York, they do have pockets of red. They do have pockets of Republicans,
yeah.
And they would lose votes, congressional votes.
Yeah, I wonder. I want to ask you what the principled argument is for this on either side, because it's very, I have stopped at the political hack argument, which is fine because that's what the Democrats are doing in California, as you just articulated, right? They want winner take all in California because they want to get all the electorate. And I'm like, and I think my argument for Nebraska is, well, I want all the red electorate. I want all the red votes too. And I haven't really thought it past that. I haven't thought of like, oh, well, it's better for representation of the blah, 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 blah. Or here's what our founding fathers thought when they did that. I haven't really gotten to that point yet because I'm just like, well, whatever, let's play the game. And the game is that the blue states want winner take all because they win blue. And for some reason, one of our red states decides to split it up and give an elector to the Democrats for no good reason at all. And I don't understand that. So what is your principled argument for why we should have winner take all? Not just it's better for Republicans. Which is a fine answer, honestly, but...
Yes, correct. Yeah, and what you just said was absolutely right in the middle of the bullseye. You stated that very clearly, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. The argument for winner-take-all, as I said a few moments ago, and that is that it is in principle the same... It has the same arguments as we have an electoral college. What it does is it spreads out representation of the electorate, that is the people... to a large or to a geographical area. It does not simply just give a voice to heavily populated areas, like in this state for Nebraska, Lincoln, and Omaha. But instead, it makes the outlying states, the western part of Nebraska, it gives them a voice that's in some ways equal to the population, the dense population areas of the state.
Now, someone called in the other day when we were talking about this, and they said, well, hold on, Slater, I live in Illinois. I would actually like it the way Nebraska does it, because Chicago would get theirs, and I in southern Illinois or whatever would get, we'd get some. So it goes both ways, right?
Yep, it does. Here's an example for you. If the entire nation would be the composite plan, the district plan, Then, in the second race for Obama, Romney would have won.
Interesting.
So both sides of the argument can make their case, but I think that what the majority of the country has done over the past so many years, I think that's worked quite well. But as you just stated a few moments ago, a few red states, Nebraska and Maine's kind of a purple state, but we've kind of it's been a bad thing for Nebraska.
Well, okay.
Two times, just for your listeners, twice, once for the 2020 election for Trump, and then one of the Obama races. That's when we had a split vote here in Nebraska.
Yes, we're Omaha. Okay. I guess the bigger picture question, you can deny this, and that's why I wanted to have someone from Nebraska on to help us. From afar, it looks like, and again, totally rebuke this, it looks like another example, and there's a plethora of them, Senator, of feckless Republicans who, for the love of Pete, you have a supermajority and you can't even get a thing done that benefits Republicans or is a good thing to do. In Nebraska, you can't get it done in Nebraska. Republicans can't do anything good anywhere. Is that true, or am I taking that too far, Senator?
Well, no, that is true. But I just, again, want to remind you that it's the legislature here in Nebraska. We've got, it's not just a majority, it's a supermajority. And what the Democrats do, they exercise this filibuster, and that requires a supermajority to pass any type of meaningful legislation, which is really frustrating, but
yeah,
you know, it's part of our process.
Wonder if that can be changed. You know, I'll tell you this: the Democrats, if the Democrats had a supermajority, which you guys have now, they would absolutely change that process so as to make it you only need
You're
a majority.
Right.
Of course, they'd play that game. In California, there was for a long time, it took a supermajority of voters on a proposition to pass a tax increase. It took 66%, and they changed it. They changed it to 50%. So they make it easier. Can Republicans in Nebraska make it easier so you don't have to do this nonsense anymore?
Yeah, it's changing rules. And in my opinion, we do need to change the rules. And it's rather frustrating that the powers that be don't do that.
Yeah. Okay. Last question for you, Senator. So it doesn't look like it'll happen this go around. Is that your conclusion right now, or is there still a chance?
That is correct. It's statistically impossible to get it done this year, unfortunately. And you know what? I would just like to put in this little plug for all the listeners to your program, and I'm sure that you know this already. Of all the people that are eligible to vote in the United States, only 67% are registered to vote, two-thirds of them. So one-third are not even registered to vote. And then during presidential years, like we're in this year right now, only 54% of that two-thirds who are registered to vote actually do vote. So approximately half of the two-thirds vote. And during off-presidential years, only 39% of that two-thirds percent of registered voters vote. So, and that would go also people that are churchgoers, carry their Bibles to church, well, 20% of those folks do not vote. We need to have people get out and vote, become knowledgeable, get engaged, and vote.
No question. And on that last point, tell me about this state senator in Nebraska who did flip from the Democratic to the Republican Party. Who's this guy? What's he about?
His name is Mike McDonnell. And it's interesting in that now he's in his last year, so he's got 4 days left out of 8 years because we've got term limits here. You can only run for the Nebraska legislature for two consecutive terms, take one term off, and then go again. So our terms are 4 years in length.
Okay.
We have a Bible study on Wednesday mornings at 6:45 a.m. He lives in Omaha. And Mike McDonnell has made every one of those Bible studies for the past 8 years. This guy is a man of absolute character. Now, we talked about this winner take all, and he gave his word last year and it's carried into this year. He said, I will not vote for winner take all. I will, you know, he gave his stance on it and he kept it. He's a man of his word. He doesn't go back. So I don't want to throw him under the bus. I think the world of him. He is a person of courage, a man of his word, and we are just thrilled to have him in the Republican Party. And I would say the same thing even before last week, before he became a Republican. He is an outstanding man in every way.
Yeah, I was speaking more about his stance on abortion, the thing that caused him, not so much his stance on this winner-take-all thing. Is that the impetus that caused him to switch parties?
That is exactly correct. That's right. Mike has been pro-life from the get-go, and he's very strong in his Christian beliefs. He does not waver. He does not put his finger up into the wind. He's just a great guy. I just cannot say enough good things about him.
Who leads the state Senate Bible study?
Well, there's about, when everybody attends, there's about 14 people that go to it. We do have a chaplain for the state capitol. His name is Aaron Hess. He's an absolutely great guy. He's a retired minister from Norfolk, Nebraska. And this year we've been going through, last year we went through Joseph. And so what we do is we pick out a person in the Bible and do a character study and just go verse by verse through the book.
Yeah,
been
listen,
outstanding.
Listen, so we got this is what we got. This is what I've learned about Nebraska. We got you're paid $1,000 a month. You have 60-day sessions and Bible studies on Mondays. I think that's about right. I think that's how it should be. And if we got back to those three things, I think we'd be a much better country.
Amen to that.
Senator, State Senator Lauren Lippincott. Great to talk to you, Senator. Appreciate you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time.
Keep up many of the fights, the winner-take-all included, but I'm sure there's many more in Nebraska you can lead the charge on.
I'm American made. I got American parts.
Thanks for listening to Breitbart News Daily. Slater at Breitbart.com is my email, and Slater Radio on the Twitter and Instagram. We'll see you tomorrow.